Hey everybody, this is Gene Troyer. I'm the lead pastor of Restore Church, and what a pleasure it is to welcome you to our podcast. It's my hope that you will be marked by love and encouraged in your faith and inspired to become all God has created you to be. Now I invite you to lean in and enjoy the podcast. Hey, thanks, Restore Worship, for leading us today. This is the first Sunday of Advent and the first Sunday of our Christmas 2020 collection of talks, Christmas, It's Our Season. Advent has, within the church calendar, had several different iterations throughout history. But today, tradition holds that Advent begins on the fourth Sunday prior to Christmas and ends on Christmas Eve. Advent is a time of reflection. It's a time of expectant waiting. We anticipate the Christ as child, but farther along, looking farther ahead, Advent is also a reminder that Christ as King will settle everything, make everything right again. It's the season of Christmas, we say. 'Tis the season we sing. Now, I've been keenly aware, and correctly so, of what I think is the overuse of the word season. We refer to a point in time or a period of time as a season. You know, like in this season of my life, or this has been a good season, but now I need to move on. We're just in a new season, or maybe it was right for the season I was in. Sometimes it seems that the word season is used in a kind of a let me down gently medley of words. Often, this is language we use around endings and transitions. But what if we did an about-face and thought of endings as beginnings, transitions as opportunities, and stuck in a season as the perfect moment for sending our roots deep into the soil of our lives, and then watch and see? It takes patience and long endurance, but eventually, after the root system has been in incubation, it's been out of sight, then watch and see as spiritual nutrition finds its way into our root system and brings the growth and flourishing we've longed for, we've believed for, and that is finally revealed at long last, you know, at just the right time. What if? What if in the waiting to head off to college, to get married? What if in the waiting for Christmas morning or the birth of a child? What if as we find ourselves longing for that next big event, we would take this season and make it our season that reminds us that even in the struggle, there is beauty. Our season is upon us. Advent calls us to lean into hope, into peace, joy, and love. Advent calls us to let the roots go down deep as we wait expectantly for our coming King. In a world of election chaos, pandemic pandemonium, division and loss, in the imperfections, in our pain and in our turmoil, even there, you guys, we can have hope. Dietrich Bonhoeffer says that the celebration of Advent is possible only to those who are troubled in soul, who know themselves to be poor and imperfect, and who look forward to something greater to come. Something greater to come. It sounds hopeful. I wonder, where do you find hope? Where in your life is it most difficult to experience? And by the way, is hope dependent on my effort, on my abilities? Or can I be hopeful without being in control of every aspect of my life? Can I be hopeful in the mysterious and even in the unknown? See, it's the unknown that often trips us up, and it keeps us from living fully into the moment that we're in. It's this living in the unknown that will increase our fear factor. And the more we live in fear, the less we're going to trust the one who actually has the power to conquer our fear. He has the power to annihilate the worry and the weakness and the despair that sinks us deeper into hopelessness. But sometimes our hopelessness takes us on a journey that's actually a helpful journey, where we gain perspective, where we have the opportunity to open our hearts to the possibility of hope, to the possibility of grace, and to the possibility of a God that saw, and to a God that sees and still sees our darkness, whose spirit hovered over the dark pre-creation, and whose spirit hovers and broods over our darkness as he continues to create who he's called us to be. In the first book of the Bible, in Genesis chapter 1, we read these words. We read that in the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. And the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. Now let's pause for just a moment because I want you to think about this. Can you imagine, friends, if the Spirit of God is moving upon the face of the waters, He's moving, He's brooding over the darkness. You know, it might be hard to visualize this, but do you sense your own darkness? Maybe this would help. If you sense your own darkness, do you feel the depth of spiritual groaning that we seem to be doing even right now? We're embroiled in so much division and disunity, but at the same time, I see the Spirit of God hovering over the deep, over the dark, brooding over the chaos, and I have hope. Because to brood, when something broods, it means to cover or loom or fill the atmosphere. And I love that picture that the Spirit of God hovers, it looms, it is brooding over our darkness. And when the Spirit of God comes, He fills the atmosphere. Because as the Word says, then the Spirit came, moving upon the face of the water. Hope entered the equation. This equation that says dark plus dark equals more darkness. But the Spirit of God moved. It hovered. It brooded. It filled the atmosphere. It filled the atmosphere over the waste, the darkness, the deep water, the lifelessness, the void, and spoke life into what was dead. This is at creation. But you and I, we can live in the now. We feel it, and we can choose if in our waiting, in our stumbling, we will live in defeat or if we will rise up. Because hope is possible if we choose to see through the darkness of our journey. It's our journey toward the light. You know, Jesus taught us that the eye is the lamp of the body. By this he means that your perception is what will determine your experience in this life. In the book of Matthew, the first book of the New Testament in chapter 6, Jesus speaks these words and he says, "The eye is the lamp of the body. And if your eye," which means your perception, if your eye is clear, your whole body, your bodily experience in this life, your whole body will be full of light. If your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. So, he says, if the light that you already have, the light that you already are, if the light is in you is dark, how dark it will be. Light or darkness? Which are you perceiving? If your sight is clear, you'll see light. You'll see beauty and you'll see wonder all around you. This kind of seeing is the eternal realm of the Father. It's called the kingdom of heaven. If, however, your sight isn't clear, you're going to see darkness. You'll see offense and you'll see grievance. It is as Jesus said, "You are the light of the world." And when we exercise that light, we're pushing back the darkness and we're speaking life to that which has been pronounced dead. Pain will come. It is real. But you know what? Suffering is optional. Jesus, he bore our suffering as his own. We read that it is by his stripes that we're healed. And it is through his suffering that we become whole. Yes, I know. There are days. There are days when in our pain and in our suffering, we cry with King David as he did in Psalm 22. He said, my God, why have you forsaken me? But we also, like David, can conclude our lament with these beautiful words of assurance that God has not despised or scorned the afflicted one. He has not hidden his face from him. See, God does not leave us when we stumble, when we lose hope. He draws close to our human experience. He sees our pain and he enters into the journey with us. Consider this true story of how even though we are equipped to see clearly, sometimes our life circumstances and our experiences will cause our sight to be dimmed. The Cambodian genocide of the late 70s resulted in a group of refugees that settled in Long Beach, California. A peculiar thing happened with these refugees. Over time, they started going blind. Yet their eyes were healthy. And through brain imaging, it was determined that nothing was wrong with their eyes or their vision centers. And yet, they couldn't see. So with some deeper research, it was revealed that all of them, every one of them, had witnessed terrible suffering. The murder of their families. Husbands and parents, children, they were killed in the most unimaginable, brutal manner. And the pain and suffering from that experience caused a condition called psychosomatic blindness. Researchers said it was almost like a see no evil kind of thing. They'd gone blind. Their minds had simply chosen not to see anymore. Hopelessness and darkness had become their normal. Their pain, it was unbearable, and it caused physical reactions. Now, our pain is real too. But I believe if pain can blind us, then the love of Jesus can bring sight to that blindness. It can heal the broken places in us and restore the reality of hope that is available to us through the renewing of our mind and through the transforming power of the Spirit. Author Sarah Bessie writes these words. She says, God seeks us out when we are in exile and when we are suffering, when we are callous and cowardly, when we are more concerned with common sense than faithfulness, when we are fearful and arrogant, when we are lost and broken, when we feel forgotten and bored and insignificant and tired, when we are wounded and when we are the ones who are wounding. Yes, God seeks us out even when we are in exile, when we have lost our way. Now back to Genesis 1. In verse 3, God said, let there be light, and there was light. And God saw the light, that it was good, and God divided the light from the darkness. And there it is, light. Hope is that light. And since the day God said from creation on, he said till now, darkness cannot exist when light is introduced. See, your darkest night cannot stand when hope enters the equation. When God says, let there be light, the darkness must flee. When God says, it is finished, it's done. But still, there are times of waiting, hopeful waiting. If you recall, it was 700 years from the time that the prophet Isaiah spoke these prophetic words from Isaiah 9 until Jesus was finally born. Here it is in verse 2, the people who walk in darkness will see a great light. For those who live in a land of deep darkness, a light will shine. For a child is born to us, a son is given to us. The government will rest on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. His government and its peace will never end. He will rule with fairness and justice from the throne of his ancestor David for all eternity. This word was given 700 years before the birth of Jesus, and still they waited. Expectantly, they waited. Hopefully, they waited for the light to overcome the darkness. In the waiting, if this is where you find yourself, the practice of preparation matters. It's our way of keeping our eyes and our hearts and our arms wide open to whatever is next. See, waiting is never meant to endorse inaction or laziness. I know that waiting and keeping watch, it's especially difficult for our tech age to endure. We've been seduced by the big and the powerful, and yet God mostly works in the small and in the quiet. His ways are about as loud as a seed falling on the ground, or bread rising in the oven. His ways are rarely found in the shouts of the crowd, but more often found in trickling tears and whispered prayers. Author and pastor Brian Zond, he offers that we are impressed by big and loud. God is not. We're in a hurry. God is not. We want God to act fast, but God's speed is almost always slow. So while we wait for God to act, perhaps we wait to become quiet enough to discern what he's doing. See, when God broke through history, he didn't come to the Pharisees, the scribes, and the priests, but God came to pagan stargazers and peasant shepherds, quiet people on the fringes of society, quiet people on the edge. They were the ones who discerned what God was doing in the seemingly ordinary event of a young woman giving birth in the dead of night in some out-of-the-way place. The waiting is to become quiet enough and contemplative enough to discern what God is doing in the obscure and forgotten corners far from the corridors of power. See, we want God to act in Washington, D.C., but God first acts in the quiet corner of our own living room and in a stable on the edge of Bethlehem. Christmas 2020, it's our season. It's our season to anticipate hope, to pursue peace, to embrace joy, to love without condition. And while we wait, we echo again the prophetic words of Isaiah 35. This is how it reads. With this news, strengthen those who have tired hands and encourage those who have weak knees. Say to those with fearful hearts, be strong and do not fear, for your God is coming to destroy your enemies. He is coming to save you. Here comes heaven. Hope is here. Would you pray with me? Father, I thank you in this moment that your presence in our lives brings hope unending. Your sending of Jesus to earth 2,000 years ago was meant to bring us into alignment with you. And that's the accomplishment of Jesus. Father, I thank you today that no matter where we are, no matter how we have subscribed to the chaotic atmosphere of our day, no matter how discontented we are in the moment, and no matter how much strife and pain we've come through, and maybe we're still in the middle of, God, I believe that you have created us for such a time as this. And we get to step into these moments, and we get to experience whether or not we will be hopeful or whether we will retreat back into darkness, whether we will see the light and focus our attention on what is right and good, or if we will step away and check back into darkness. God, I believe with all my heart that someone on the other side of this broadcast today is believing that they can step into the light. And so wherever you are this morning, if the next right thing for you is to say yes to Jesus, to say, I need the hope of Christ deep within me, then make that request. He hears you. You simply say, Jesus, I give you my life. It's that simple. You'll have a lot more to talk about, but that's a start. That's where you can start. It's just, Jesus, I give you my life. Because Jesus is the way, he's the truth and the life. He is the great provider of hope for you and for me, especially now in this season that we find ourselves, this season of Advent. Let's embrace hope. All right, friends, before we go, let me just remind you that our Christmas offering fund for 2020 includes student scholarships. It includes the Window Food Pantry, the Elkhart County Jail Ministries. And so what I'd love for you to do is to go to our Give button on our homepage at restore.church and begin thinking about what you will do to help fund these ministries. Many of us give regularly to Restore Church, and so the Christmas offering is above and beyond what we normally do. So think and pray, talk to each other, see what God might say to you about what you can do to be part of this exciting time of the year, because as I always say, together we can always do more than we could ever do alone. Thanks for joining us for today's episode. Please rate and review us on Spotify and iTunes, and join us again for next week's podcast. We love you and pray blessing and peace over you and your family.